Move more, eat less, get some exercise, get some rest. These are all things that we are told to keep us healthy, but they can't keep us from aging, right? Well, Dr. Vladimir Hafensohn is an expert on aging, and I bet he has some ideas on the matter.
There are 13 people alive in the world today, aged between 113 and 119. Does it mean we want to halt evolution? People who live longer are usually optimists.
A good strategy would be to eat less in terms of quantity, but more in terms of nutrient density.
So this physical exercise activates this factor in the brain, which prevents a lot of neurodegenerative diseases.
Until the age of 90, humans will be able to work, to create, and do whatever they feel like.
Thank you for taking the time to meet with us today to answer some really important questions, I think. So let's start off with, you have said that we are genetically programmed to live between 105 years to 120 years. Why that specific number and not maybe, let's say, 130, 150?
Maybe 200.
Exactly.
The question about human lifespan is natural to ask, and it's asked pretty often, especially by those interested in science and culture. It's a good question, but the answer is actually quite simple. We can examine what we observe in practice, the data we gather from demographics and statistics. For example, there are 13 people alive in the world today, aged between 113 and 119. In addition, there are 163 people pending verification. Researchers are trying to confirm their birth and/or death dates, which is a necessary process. In Russia, the oldest person recorded was Varvara Semenikova, who lived to be 117 in Yakutia. The Bible says in Genesis 6:3 that God gave man 120 years. Now this is, of course, the Bible, the religious text. We don't know why that figure is given. However, it correlates with what we see around us. So it's believed that the maximum lifespan is roughly 120 years. That's the physiological limit of human longevity. As for living 150 or 200 years, there's no record of anyone ever achieving that age. So we base our understanding on practical experience and the data provided by demographics and statistics. Officially, longevity starts at 90. People who are 100 and older are put in a separate category, centenarians, and those who live more than 110 years are supercentenarians. This is the graduation used in medicine and science in general.
How much of this is down to our own genetics and what we have inside us, and how much of our aging process is due to external factors that we have no control over?
Genetics is currently thought to account for about 30% of how long we live, and lifestyle for the remaining 70%. Lifestyle consists of a host of factors, collectively termed epigenetics. So, to repeat, genetics is 30%, and the rest is epigenetics, or lifestyle, which includes a number of variables we can discuss later. This ratio applies not only to people, but to all living things, from plants to humans. This is how science sees the role of genetics in longevity.
A colleague of yours, but on a different targeted a different trajectory, Dr. Aubrey de Grey, has a theory that our aging process comes down to junk or trash that we have collected in our genome.
I must point out that Aubrey de Grey is a computer scientist with a background in programming and related areas, not biology or medicine. However, he established the Methuselah Foundation and successfully attracted significant attention and funding for aging research. Individuals like him play a crucial role. They basically regulate the development of our civilization by showing where money should be invested. But claiming that people can live for thousands of years is certainly premature. It's unrealistic. There's no basis for that assertion. There are also other scientists like de Grey who suggest that we can cancel the aging process altogether. But what does it mean? But does it mean we want to halt evolution?
My understanding is that your work is in peptides and how they work with the human body and slowing the aging process. You've also mentioned that you're a realist instead of a sensationalist. Talk to me a little bit about your work specifically. What are peptides and how do they help our body?
Peptides are small proteins, and all proteins are composed of amino acids. There are 20 amino acids that make up proteins, and the order of the amino acids in the protein structure determines the properties of a given peptide. Now, what makes peptides so important? Firstly, peptides are found everywhere in nature, from plants to humans. Peptides act as natural regulators. My team and I used to extract peptides from different calf organs, from the immune system, that is, from the thymus, from the brain, from the liver. We isolated short peptides from 20 different organs. Then we analyzed their structure. That is, the order of the amino acids. If you change the sequence even slightly, the function of the peptide will be entirely different. So the exact order of the amino acids is critical. Now, aging means a decline in the activity of genes and a decrease in the synthesis of gene regulatory proteins, which result in all sorts of pathologies. But peptides can be used to stimulate gene activity, which leads to an increase in protein synthesis and the elimination of certain effects of aging. That's why we researched the use of peptides in older animals. Together with Vladimir Anisimov, the Gerontological Society president and Russian Academy of Sciences member, we conducted 25 experiments involving peptides. We injected lab animals like mice, rats, and even flies with thymus peptides that regulate the immune system, and with epiphyseal peptides that regulate the endocrine system. As a result, we were able to extend the lifespan of the animals by up to 40% compared to the control group, with variation depending on the experiment. Most importantly, all 25 trials produced extended lifespans, between 20 and 40%. This proves that peptides play a massive role in aging. Why only up to 40%, you might ask? Well, that's because it's the maximum age that species can reach. The average lifespan of an animal is typically 30 to 40% lower than its species limit. Now, peptides have proven to be very effective in that respect, without significant side effects. We've developed 11 peptide-based drugs that have been registered in accordance with the state pharmacopoeia. Of the Russian Federation. This medication regulates the immune system, brain function, liver function, and the reproductive system. As of today, more than 110 million people have used them.
For me, quality of life is important, and a lot of people think that anti-aging is just about the cosmetics, about keeping the wrinkles away. Is there significant progress being done in making sure that we keep our minds so that we don't forget everything as we get older?
A person doing physical or fun activities has a better chance of living a long life, while depression, melancholy, having to deal with problems both around you and at home, all of these things shorten people's lives. Another important factor is chronic stress. Anxiety and stress are known to shorten people's lifespans. In fact, there was a study done when they looked at women with breast cancer, and it turned out that they all suffered from chronic stress. Sadly, stress affects the incidence of cancer. That's why people who live longer are usually optimists. They're always excited about something and never too stressed. So we've got peptides from the brain and from blood vessels. By the way, we also researched the effects of this treatment on Alzheimer's disease. It was a major study done on transgenic mice from the United States. When we injected those mice with brain peptides and cardiovascular peptides, we were able to preserve the neural network structure. Basically, we were the first to effectively halt the development of Alzheimer's in animals. We've also worked on Parkinson's disease and Huntington's disease. Like Alzheimer's, these are all neurodegenerative diseases. They too pose a major problem in terms of premature aging and humans suffering disability. Our peptide drugs have been shown to partially improve brain and vascular function.
I'm going to ask you the one question that's on everybody's mind, the million-dollar question. We hear you need to exercise. We hear that you need to eat properly. We hear that you need to eat rest. In your mind, what is the most important factor to prevent aging?
You know, as we have already said, 30% is to do with genetics and 70% with epigenetics, that is, lifestyle. It's the sum of all factors, obviously. But the most important thing is to follow your biorhythm. Why? The fact is, you need to go to bed before midnight. From 12 to 3 o'clock at night, the epiphysis produces melatonin, the substance that regulates the entire endocrine system. If you don't go to bed before that, melatonin isn't produced, and the endocrine system starts to fail. Moreover, it was even proven that night work causes cancer in people more often, including in women. And therefore, you absolutely must follow your biorhythm. The second factor is restricting calories. Food intake is the most important factor in our diet, and cutting down calorie intake, for example by 30% in carbohydrates and fats, halves the probability of diabetes, reduces the risk of cancer, and so on. For example, George Roth from the National Institute of Aging in the United States has been conducting an extensive experiment on monkeys for 20 years. The group, which had its diet cut by 30%, reducing carbohydrates and fat intake, well, 20 years in, they are 2 times less likely to develop diabetes, and the rate of cancer has gone down too.
It has been scientifically proven that caloric reduction can directly prolong human life. Today, we're speaking to Dmitry Alexeyev. He is a microbiologist and a health food guru. Dmitry, hi. Thanks for coming out to meet me.
Sean.
So I see we're surrounded here by all sorts of seemingly healthy-looking food. I know that there's food that can help us slow aging and then some that can speed it up. Talk to me what's happening in my body, let's say, for example, if I eat too much red meat.
Excessive red meat consumption has been linked to a high risk of heart diseases. That's because when we eat red meat, we also consume excessive fats that turn into cholesterol in our arteries, making them narrower. In order to pump blood, our hearts must then beat harder and faster. The worst-case scenario is when these cholesterol flakes burst out and travel through our bodies, clotting vessels in our hearts and brains, which can be deadly. Statistics show that eating red meat 3 times a day is a little too much. There's a completely normal part of our diet, but all dietologists say that it should be combined with a variety of plant-based foods.
Now, you study the microbiome, if I'm correct, and what can that tell us, how our microbiome feels, I guess? Will we be able to live longer?
Cool that you've asked. This topic is over 100 years old now. Nobel Prize winner Ilya Mechnikov came up with the word probiotics. Yes, it sounds quite familiar today, but interestingly enough, he discovered healthy microbes when studying those who'd live long lives in Bulgaria, the Lactobacillus bulgaricus. That study convinced him there was a specific diet that meant you lived much longer. Microbiome is important. It loves plant food. That is the bacteria that lives on food fibers. It is interesting that meat here sort of does the opposite, especially the kind of meat that we're used to now, steaks, for example. Our ancestors would eat skin, bones, joints, cartilage, that sort. And now we understand that from a microbiome perspective, that's much healthier than even lean beef.
Well, I know that there's bacteria that can help us slow down the aging process. I want to make sure that those are taken care of. What can I do to feed those, if you will?
In Russia, we have sauerkraut, soused apples and pickled cucumbers. The Japanese have natto, Koreans have kimchi. Every culture has a traditional recipe to ferment vegetables. It turns out that bacteria in fermented food helps us to live longer. So the simplest advice is here, I'll show you, to enjoy traditional Russian fermented food, like pickles.
Well, you bring up a good point. We hear a lot about MGMOs and chemicals that are going into all of the the pickles, the cucumbers, the produce that we see in grocery stores. So what's the point if we're trying to eat really healthy and we just go to a grocery store and we're getting all these chemicals into our body anyway? I mean, you bring up a good point about growing your own food, maybe.
One of the things we need to address is a trending concern about seasonal produce and farmers' produce. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference when you know who grows your food and how to grow it yourself. It is quite popular in Russia. Many here have countryside houses and some land to farm on. Eating this kind of produce can easily add 3 to 5 quality years on your life. Mass-produced vegetables for the market, like these tomatoes, with no smell, are what you can call empty calories. It's nothing except skin and water. A good strategy would be to eat less in terms of quantity, but more in terms of nutrient density, paying attention to how much good stuff like vitamins or minerals you ingest with food. Of course, things like pollutants, pesticides and herbicides are ubiquitous these days, but we need to remember that the human body has its own way of getting rid of toxins, and certain diets and food strategies can help with it. It's nothing short of amazing that every human society has a fasting tradition. In the Russian Orthodox Church, we call it Lent, and pretty much every religion has something similar. And it usually takes place when fresh produce is scarce, so the idea behind it is to eat less before new crops become available and give yourself a proper detox. So even if you don't use any special pharmaceuticals, you can regulate this process by fasting from time to time. There is this method called intermittent fasting, for example. It works the same way. It's a question of choosing the food that works for you and that you can afford. And since pollution is a factor in all big cities, you need to help your system detox from time to time.
The third thing is physical exercise. The human heart pumps about 2/3 of our blood, and 1/3 is pumped by blood vessels like veins. Walking while keeping your heart rate under 120 BPM is essential. Nordic style with poles, or walking in parks, that's fine, but not along a busy highway. The best thing is to be able to walk somewhere nice, 5 to 10,000 steps a day.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today. 10,000 steps, that's what we need to have to keep our bodies active and healthy throughout the day, each day. Why 10,000 steps? Why this number? Did they just pull it out from thin air, or is there specific science behind this?
Well, it doesn't have to be 10,000 steps. That's what the World Health Organization recommends you walk every day. That's the range given based on individual factors like health condition, age, overall fitness, and condition, based on cardio, bones, and muscles. Large-scale trials were conducted for people 45 to 85 years old, and they proved that those who moderately engage in physical exercise every day have better cardiovascular parameters compared to those who don't. That's because walking activates our immune response system, and better blood circulation means more oxygen reaching all our organs and tissues. There's also this recently discovered factor called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, and this factor is produced when people are physically active. So this physical exercise activates this factor in the brain, which prevents a lot of neurodegenerative diseases. Also, recent research has shown that people over 60 who do physical exercises at least 3 times a week get Alzheimer's disease 40% less often.
So we know that moving is important, but is it possible for someone to be moving too much, as in too much exercise, for a body to adapt and to prevent us from aging?
Frolkis argued, after conducting practical tests on animals, that physical exercise leads to a premature death in animals. More evidence of that is shown in high-performance sports, where physical, psychological, and emotional stresses lead to the exhaustion of our immune and endocrine systems, accelerated aging, and premature death.
We know that walking is important. We know that cardio helps get the oxygen moving through your system. Is there anything else that you knew? We know that muscles and tone is important as well. What else do people need to do to stay active and keep their bodies in shape?
In fact, health is an integral metric. Of course, physical activity influences not only our immune and endocrine systems, but also our muscles and bones, because bone tissue mineralization is an important factor in our overall health status. Unfortunately, with age, we develop a condition called osteoporosis, which causes bones to fracture easily. You hit a limb or fall down and end up with a fracture, greatly reducing your quality of life or worse. Again, a passive lifestyle is the way to bone tissue demineralization, deterioration of the cardiovascular system, and as a result, it reduces quality of life. Moderate exercise is our path towards longevity.
Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Preventative treatment is crucial for medicine in the future. Peptide pharmaceuticals and preventative measures are factors that will allow us to extend the active part of our lifespan. That is, until the age of 90. Humans will be able to work, to create, and do whatever they feel like.
Biohacking is very popular these days. And in essence, to some degree, what you do in your work with peptides is also biohacking, but some people are going to extremes and even doing harm to themselves, thinking that they're doing the right thing. How do we protect people from that, and what are your thoughts on this?
Well, biohacking is a very interesting sphere. I think it makes sense, as people want to be healthy. It's popular among young people. But what worries me is that most people have no education in medicine or biology. The approach is purely technical. I'll be doing it this way and that way. But there is no control, experience, or statistics behind it. That's why many matters relating to biohacking make little sense and require serious caution. Imagine that a device breaks down, like a TV or computer. You call a technician who knows how to fix it. It's the same with humans. Before taking something, you really should consult a specialist and ask, is it good for me? I think there needs to be control, using the expertise of the medical community, first and foremost. There are medical associations, and they should be asked first, before taking or using anything. You realize, of course, that half of what's on the internet is incorrect or false. So we need to keep that in mind and avoid these things whenever possible. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hafkinson, it's been an absolute pleasure, an interesting and very important conversation. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. Yeah.